This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, be careful if you're walking. Look up from your cell phone or you might bump into a presidential candidate. In this final week of the campaign, they are everywhere in North Carolina. Meanwhile, Senator Burr's bullseye comment about Hillary Clinton seemed off the mark to some. The senator also promises, if reelected and if Hillary wins, he'll join with his GOP friends to block any of her Supreme Court nominees. The gubernatorial race tightens. The county commission takes up magnets and Charlotte's lending tree adds jobs, while Belk cuts staff. Our roundtable of reporters is set to talk about those stories and more. We're joined by WFAE's Tom Bullock and Sean Flynn, managing editor of Time Warner Cable News. Good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. Morning.
Mary C. Curtis joins us for the first time on the News Roundup. She is a columnist for Roll Call and a contributor to NBC, BLK, NPR, WCCB, News Rising Charlotte, and has contributed to Love Her, Love Her Not, The Hillary Paradox. What is that?
It's a book that was compiled by Joanne Bamberger. It's several thought leaders around the country who weigh in on you know who, and each of us have contributed an essay, a chapter.
Okay. And Eric Frazier, of course, is with us. He's editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer. Good to see you again.
Good to be here.
In these final moments of the 2016 presidential campaign, we're experiencing what it means to be a battleground state. Donald Trump was in Concord on Thursday. Vice President Biden was here this week. President Obama was in Chapel Hill on Wednesday. He's here tonight at the PNC Music Pavilion. Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump have also been here. Mary, you just returned from an Ivanka appearance in the state. Where was she?
Well, she went several places. I caught her when she came here in Charlotte to the GOP headquarters, and she was greeted like a rock star with people yelling her name and some fans of hers who may not particularly have felt that enthusiastic about her dad but loved Ivanka. She was thanking volunteers, telling people they had to get out the vote, and trying to make that all-important appeal to women, where Donald Trump has had a bit of a problem. So she was there talking about that as well.
Did she say anything new, or does she just soften the edges? So
more softening the edges, I believe. Reminding people that I am the daughter of this person who has been accused of not respecting women, and I've done well. And she is a very impressive presence. She took a lot of selfies and photos with fans, and just reminding people to get out. And the women there did particularly relate to her and basically say if he could raise somebody like that, Donald Trump, he couldn't be so bad.
Okay. You, Tom, were at the Trump rally, I believe, in Concord yesterday. Donald Trump, when he comes to North Carolina, spends the bulk of his time in rural areas or areas that touch the rural areas because that's where his support base seems to be. What did he talk about?
Well, I mean, in fairness, he's been in Charlotte twice. He's been in Greensboro, actually, inside both city limits, Nashville. He talked about the same thing he normally talks about. I mean, quite honestly, I was expecting something more of a strong closing argument simply because this, at the time, seemed to be one of his last stops in what is a must-win state for Donald Trump. Now, since that appearance, he's actually booked two more appearances on Sunday. One over the weekend and then one on Monday in Raleigh. And it's the same thing over and over again, at least when it comes to stance. Now, you have to give him this. He has been on point. He is not being pulled onto the distractions that have derailed his candidacy, even Republicans would say, for whole weeks, or if not almost a whole month at a time. So it was the wall. It was tariffs for companies that move overseas. It was Hillary Clinton is going to be, you know, cause a constitutional crisis as soon as if she wins, because she will be impeached almost immediately. It was the classic attack line. Now, what was interesting to me is the crowd at the Cabarrus County Arena was smaller than when he first went there back in the primaries, but far more vocal, far more energized, and far louder. I mean, angry is an interesting word. Certainly some were absolutely angry. Certainly some fully believe that this election is rigged. Certainly some were just excited to see a presidential candidate in a battleground state.
I wonder where they got that idea.
I will tell you, I went to his rally at the same place in Concord in March when he was really gaining steam in the Republican primary. And the speeches were almost identical, at least to me, listening to them. I mean,
yeah,
you
right,
really
John.
Could have exchanged the same exact speech.
The only thing difference was that was where he did originally what turned into a bit of a controversy when he asked people to raise their hand and pledge allegiance, swear allegiance to vote for Trump. Uh-huh.
Well,
he didn't
do
that anymore. But
and all these speeches, I've been watching an inordinate amount of coverage of this in the last 5 days because I'm so afraid.
but afraid of what, Tom?
I don't know. I'm watching everything, and all the speeches are the same now because they've been campaigning for 2 years. What else is there left to say but what they've said?
Yeah, you
for
can
two
pretty
years.
Much finish their speech lines for them now.
In Charlotte, I went to an early one and a later one where he appeared, Donald Trump, and I wrote about and roll call about it that the tension level and the animosity and the first one was kind of laid back for a Trump rally. The second one, you had protesters and Trump supporters basically in each other's faces and much more intensity at the rally, much, you know, louder cries of lock her up. And I did feel the tension level amp up, which makes me worry and wonder a little bit more about what's going to happen
after.
November 9th.
Mary's right. The tension has definitely increased. But it's so funny with this election. We all knew it was going to be negative, predominantly negative, on the presidential end in particular. But it's almost like you know that the Clinton campaign wanted to try to pivot to a more positive message, but they've basically been stuck on the attack mode because, you know, WikiLeaks emails and all sorts of stuff. But what was fascinating to me, so it's basically their surrogates that are there to be the positive side. They'll just sit there and slam each other. I mean, you were talking about Ivanka before. Now you've got, you know, Hillary Clinton out campaigning in Raleigh on Thursday with Pharrell, you know, trying to, hey, isn't everybody happy? It's almost over. Yes, we are. Let's hear him.
And she was here yesterday. Well, she was not here, but she was in the state yesterday with, as you say, Pharrell and also Bernie Sanders. I watched it on Time Warner Cable last night.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. I think he's going to go into those dorm rooms, basically, and pull the kids who are for him out of their seats.
So Bernie Sanders is trying to close the deal here, particularly with these young people. What happened yesterday at that rally?
I was just going to say, it is amazing watching him and why college-age students just love him. Obviously, he has his promises of free college and everything else. But, I mean, one would think that college students wouldn't relate to somebody with his experience.
Yeah. Well,
he brings the energy.
Yeah, I find the whole issue of her and millennials, her struggles, just so fascinating because I see this in my own household. I have a 22-year-old, feminist who will tell you up and down, left, right, you know, five ways to Sunday, all the ways in which, you know, feminists need to be heard from in this country. She is not a fan of Hillary Clinton. She hasn't told me how she voted. I'm not going to press her, but
why not?
She's also really heavy into the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
I was thankful that she was away in Greensboro after the shooting of Lamont Scott because she would have been in the streets here in Charlotte. But she just does not feel that Hillary Clinton is trustworthy, believable in all of the efforts that she's putting forth to say that she aligns herself with the Black Lives Matter movement and that she's going to do criminal justice reform and all these things. She just doesn't trust her. And it's kind of the broader, you know, sort of a microcosm of Hillary Clinton's millennial problems. She just doesn't connect with them on a visceral level. And even though her policies all say and do the right thing, mostly, that you would think would reach them, they just are still kind of like,
she's not a rock star? She's not a good she's not a good campaigner. She's not a good speech maker. There's just something about her. There's a wall, a thin tissue paper wall between her and the audience, but she's a policy wonk. How much of it is that she just doesn't ignite a fire under people, even though she might be right?
That's part
about
of
her
it.
Policy.
I think that's part of it.
But also, it's a reason why a lot of older women are definitely for Hillary Clinton because they can remember the feminist battles, the Roe v. Wade, whichever way you come on that battles. So many younger people, younger women, they assume that these things always were there for them, and that Roe v. Wade won't. And women's rights and reproductive rights, if you want to define it in that way, are fine, and that they do have equality. Mm-hmm. So it basically they've grown up with that, so that they don't relate to that in the same way and they don't remember also that even though they remember her work on the crime bill of many young African Americans, they don't really remember that she worked with Children's Defense Fund for Marion Wright Edelman, that she worked on children's health, that she went down south to expose the academy.
But by now they should know. My God, she's been talking about it for 2 years.
Well, but it's one thing to know. It's another thing to connect. And I think that's really the issue here, because it's an ad. It's out there. You know, the thing about Bernie Sanders is he's a policy wonk too. Yeah, nobody thought a 70-something-year-old socialist was really going to be hot on college campuses this year. But it also tells you the fact that he is back in the battlegrounds, specifically with her, it tells you exactly how fearful the Democrats are that something that is a key part of their winning coalition, which is the youth vote, is not going to happen. They are worried about that.
And the First Lady has been on the stump for Hillary, and she is unquestionably the rock star of rock stars.
Everyone loves Michelle. Apropos of nothing, people will just say, I wish she were running. I heard a NPR report out of England, and somebody in England said, you know, she would be a fantastic candidate.
And that person was actually someone who voted for Brexit. I mean, it's funny that you bring up Rockstar, Mike, because I actually wrote a blog post that was about what concerts teach us about popularity in politics. And if you look at the first time that they were together, Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama on stage, it was here in North Carolina. And guess who spoke last?
Yeah.
The headliner of that event was Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Well, I've written, too, that she, even though she is Princeton and she is Harvard Law, she wears that very lightly. You see that south side of Chicago.
She's just a regular lady.
So the president was in Chapel Hill on Wednesday laying out his case in part, and I believe this was the location where he laid it on to men and basically said there's a reason that there hasn't been a female president up to this point. And he kind of laid the guilt trip on men, saying it's because we don't want to give it up.
Yeah, Obama's been really interesting the last week or so. He's been giving the hard sell. I mean, I think that may have been the same rally here in North Carolina. Yeah, basically he told this crowd of it looked like a lot of young, college-age kids that, the fate of the Republic is on your shoulders. That's like, wow, okay.
No pressure.
Pretty heavy.
You think they bought that or they saw that as hyperbole?
Well, he did it as kind of a joke, but I think there's part truth to that in his eyes. And part of this is really the benefits of being a second-term president with no future desire for public office, finally just being able to say whatever you want.
Exactly. And his legacy is on the line. Yeah. So much could happen.
At one point, Hillary had an enormous lead over Trump with African-American voters in the state, but elsewhere they seem to be holding back. Why isn't she connecting? She's not connecting with your daughter, isn't she connecting with African-Americans?
Well, I know for younger voters, just because I hear it enough from my daughter, there are these just basic this connection problem that she's got, and I think some of it is that her level of African American voter support is being compared to what Obama got, which is a kind of an unfair comparison because nobody's ever going to get nobody's going to get what he got from the black community.
How does she balance out the "what do you got to lose" comment from Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, I think we're creating a false equivalency here. She's not doing as well as President Obama did, who got 90-95% of the African-American vote writ large. Mm-hmm. She's getting, 80-82% of the African-American vote writ large. I mean, Donald Trump overall, nationally, has been, polling in the low single digits with African-American voters. Here in North Carolina, it's a bit higher. It's about 5-6%. Now, these are outdated, outdated polls now, just because you never know what can change in this 2016 cycle. Right. But it's not as if she has a connection issue, but she's still dominating that.
So we'll look at polling in North Carolina when we come back. We'll look at some of the North Carolina campaigns, the key campaigns in this state when we come back, and musicians. We'll talk about musicians in politics as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Firehouse Casual Living Store, serving the Carolinas for nearly 40 years. Woodard and Castell Outdoor Furniture is featured among other brands. Showrooms at Johnston Road and W.T. Harris Boulevard, FH Casual.
Iron Yard.com, and the Iron Yard, using tech-focused education to create growth and mentorship for people and their ideas. Enrollment available for 12-week courses dedicated to teaching code and more in Charlotte. Information at theIronYard.com/Charlotte. Well, mercifully, the finish line for this election is in sight, and our state's vote could tip the outcome in either direction. Down-ballot racers are drawing national attention, and the outcome of our Senate race could decide who controls the United States Senate. Well, as the moments till all the votes are counted dwindle down to a precious few, we will hear from NPR's Ron Elving and Dr. Michael Bitzer for final analysis on this program Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Polls show the presidential race tightening in the final days of the campaign. President Obama criticizes the FBI's handling of the new investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series for the first time since 1908.
The News Roundup continues on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup with Tom Bullock from WFAE News. In our midst, Sean Flynn, managing editor of Time Warner Cable News, Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, and for the first time on this stage anywhere, Mary C. Curtis, columnist for Roll Call and NBC BLK, among other things. Let's talk about polling here. Hillary, depending upon which poll you look at, is ahead of Trump in North Carolina. The Real Clear Politics average of statewide polls showed her with a 3.2 percentage point lead over Trump last week. But yesterday, that all changed. The contest in North Carolina was tied between the two of them. But WRAL released a poll this week showing Trump with a 7-point lead. Why the variance in these numbers?
I think there's just a lot of noise in some of these polls because they can't all be correct. And they're all over the map. And, you know, people talk about this response rate issue that comes up when one candidate's having a bad news cycle and then their supporters don't want to answer the pollers' phone calls. And so you get less of a, you know, response from them. I don't know. I think maybe there's something to that because it just can't be. All these things can't be true all at the same time.
One of the most telling things, I mean, you're exactly right, Eric. And I that's why I think this year in particular, averaging the polls is a much better gauge than simply looking at any individual poll. And one of the things that's fascinating there is a current polling problem. They have got it wrong on numerous occasions and big issues. But if you look at the most telling thing is right now, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are basically still taking the states that they were expected to take early on. So even as the polls have swung wildly, Texas is still Republican, California is still Democratic, a bunch of the red states are still red, a bunch of the blue states are still blue. There's a few more toss-ups this year in places like Arizona, possibly Utah, that no one saw coming originally. Utah is a unique case. Arizona is also, I won't call it a unique case because I think it's more symbolic of something broader when it comes to, the Hispanic vote, which is becoming a stronger factor. Mm-hmm. When I saw the WRAL poll, the very first thing I thought is, that's kind of an outlier. And you go back and look at the trends, you get these blips on both sides. It doesn't mean the polls are partisan. It just means that what they got was a blip. It's statistical.
And the methodologies are so different, too.
It's like the radio
sample
ratings.
Size and things like that. What group is underpulled or, overpulled.
Also, how often it comes right after the FBI announcements or other things like
that. Well, I was going to ask
really
what impact that might have had, Sean.
Well, in those original polls days after, all of a sudden, nationally, it showed that Trump narrowed the deficit in many places in battleground states. He kind of, here in North Carolina, you just mentioned that he was down 3%. Now all of a sudden he's almost dead even in these average of polls. I think a lot of people are confused. It's remarkable to me. Here we are 2 years into this whole campaign process. And I know several people who are like, I don't know who I'm voting for. And it's not, and I can't fault them. They're like, I hate both candidates. I don't want to just throw my vote away. I just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of sentiment like that that we've not seen before. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of these polls keep going back and forth, because there probably might be a good, 5-10% of the population who's just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to flip a quarter on this one. I just don't get it.
And what's fascinating, too, is if you look at all the early voting numbers, you've got two trends that I think are really fascinating. First of all, we have caught up and are now exceeding 2008 and 2012 numbers. And then everybody looks at the classic breakdown because we don't know who those people voted for, but we know at least their party affiliation in North Carolina. But what's fascinating is the number of independent or undecided, or not undecided, what's the term?
Unaffiliated,
thank you, voters who voted. There's a huge block of them, and that's this big wild card that we don't know exactly how they went. Mm-hmm. Both sides claim the other side has motivation problems. First of all, the fact that this much early voting took place, I'd say bases are pretty motivated. Mm-hmm. But to have that high unaffiliated rate, I think people will vote. I think they are excited about this race. Maybe it's just to get it in the rearview mirror because I know personally I'm ready for that. But – you know, it's going to be a nail biter here.
I think it's just that we have a divided country, and mm-hmm. we have these little blips like a FBI report or a Access Hollywood tape, and or the first debate, right, which Hillary won, and it'll swing one way or the other, and then a few days out in the news cycle, it'll settle right back down.
So I watched Hillary and Bernie and Pharrell yesterday on Time Warner Cable. I also watched Donald Trump on Time Warner Cable. They're saying exactly the same thing.
Can't get enough plugs today, man.
Well, I know. What's going on?
It's there, and I'm paying $200-some a month, so I might as well use it, right?
Exactly.
And you can lower the fee.
Maximize your benefits.
Right. Well, I just gave you like $1,000 in commercial advertising, so lower
moving
my bill.
Moving on. Sorry I started this.
Anyway, I watched them both. They didn't say anything new, and I'm wondering what the point of all these last-minute constant – I don't think they're sleeping for the next 5 days. They're always out on the stump talking somewhere. What's the point? Is it possible to change the outcome at this point?
Yes. Yes, it is. And here's the thing. It doesn't matter. They want to stay on message because if you make a mistake at this point, it blows up all over the news. So they're going to stick to their stumps more or less. What matters is not what they say. It's where they say it and to whom.
And that they're here.
So how do you think that they've gotten Donald Trump, who has even commented on this on the stumps, that he was saying, all right, Donald.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Become, stay on
so
point.
Funny.
Stay
yeah.
on point. I mean, how have they
it's
gotten him to do that?
it's an easy.
I honestly think it's the obvious answer. When he went off, he went down. His poll numbers dropped. Mm-hmm. People really started talking about him losing this. And I think, frankly, for an individual who is based his entire like persona and brand, dare I say, on winning, to lose because of self-inflicted wounds.
Yes.
May just blow his mind, so he started finally coming to line.
I dare say that if he did not have that single personality flaw, Donald Trump would probably be the odds-on favorite right now to become the next president of the United States.
Oh,
if he could just control his temper, stay on message, do what Kellyanne Conway kept trying to get him to do.
But
the fact that a flawed candidate is so close.
Yeah.
Means that if it were Donald Trump, only a slicker version in a country that wants change.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
And, but how many of those Donald Trump supporters like him being off the cuff?
Yeah.
How much of them like him saying things that are so out of
the
political norm?
Yeah, wins you primaries, but it does not win you generals.
Yeah. So when Vice President Biden was here on Tuesday, he told the crowd here, we win in North Carolina, we win it all. Is that true? Is Florida no longer Florida, the most important state in the race, or have we become Florida?
Well,
God help us.
It is right in the simple sense of math. We have 15 electoral colleges. You know, I love the fact that like national polls are always fascinating to me, and there are arguments, and they're valid. They don't always play out, but they're valid that national polls do – states follow those trends. But it's all simply about getting to 270. Our 15 electoral votes, because of classic, you know, Democratic and Republican states, are so key to the Republicans right now. And that would have been true whether or not Donald Trump was the nominee, that this very easily could be the Democratic firewall. If the strategy has been clear, pump money into North Carolina, pump appearances into North Carolina, try to win North Carolina legitimately. But if you don't, it's okay because you have forced the Republicans to get here and spend as much time here as possible.
And money.
I think if you wind up with a situation where the Republicans do lose North Carolina, where Trump does lose North Carolina, there are going to be a lot of national Republicans looking at North Carolina and going, you know, what in the world was going on down there? I mean, you've got a you know, an economy that's on the rise. You look at Pat McCrory's argument for why he should be reelected. Just economically speaking, it's a fairly persuasive, convincing, almost bulletproof argument. All the numbers are going in the right direction. Employment down, jobs up, you know, all these different indicators economically up. And you would think that that would dictate that the party in power would be enjoying a huge lead in the polls. They're not. And McCrory's favored to lose still.
But there's so many other factors that make us the center of attention. That gubernatorial race, which has to be the most looked at in the country with the HB2 complication. Yeah. And we have a Senate race that could determine which party controls the Senate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our demographics are changing. So we are this microcosm. I wrote, we may be the new Florida. That said, it will bring that extra scrutiny, and I'm not sure North Carolina can hold up to that.
So Joe Biden says if we win North Carolina, we win it all. The president was in Florida this week. He said if we win Florida,
we win it all.
Hmm.
I think they said it in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin,
Hampshire.
Yeah. Very quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because if political stars are rock stars and their numbers aren't enough to win this, I guess the political stars are bringing in real rock stars. Pharrell Williams, yesterday with Hillary Clinton. Jon Bon Jovi will be in Charlotte to hold a concert for Hillary on Sunday at the Fillmore at the Music Factory. Does this matter? Does this work?
I don't
know.
I mean, and why is he coming here? HB2. Has he heard about HB2? Springsteen canceled. Why is Bon Jovi coming?
Hillary exception for the HB2.
So this doesn't matter? What is this about? Seriously.
Well, actually, I'm really interested. You didn't mention the big one that she's doing in Cleveland, Jay-Z, possibly Beyonce with Hillary. Although, gosh,
Do you think she's going to rap a verse? Do you think she's going to do a little
brush
it off my shoulders there?
Okay, let's
talk about. She's just going to drop the mic at the end.
It's like Jennifer Roberts doing the dab again. That's not.
Talk about the. That's why Cam stopped doing it, I think. Talk about the gubernatorial race. It's been tightening as we've been talking about. Roy Cooper seemed to be comfortably ahead, but in an Elon University poll conducted October 23rd to October 27th, which is the last one I know about, the race is too close to call. Is this a down ballot effect of the Hillary Clinton email vagaries or something else?
No, I think this is a specific North Carolina, you know, organic thing. I mean, you've got this very conservative, you know, legislature in a purple state, and you're seeing a lot of pushback from a lot of these HB2 just being, you know, of many.
And the hurricane, you know, it's a terrible thing, right? But it allowed Pat McCrory, Hurricane Matthew, to get up there and to remind people what governors do and to be a calm voice and have that role. So people were like, oh, okay. Many people who thought he really wasn't up to the job or had lost control of the conversation saw him in this way. So if any way a hurricane can help somebody, even though it was a horrible
absolutely
event.
I mean, if you just look at how many times he was on TV, I'm sure you watched him on Time Warner Cable News. Hey, he brought it up first. No, I mean, but if you saw him 2-3 times a day in front of the camera, all that free advertising that he got, it says, hey, I am the governor.
And it wasn't just cynical. Like, honestly, he was out there
doing it.
And he was being gubernatorial. Right. Yeah. What's fascinating to me, though, is I think that the governor's race in North Carolina, instead of having a coattail effect, is actually going to be more of a driver than the presidential race alone. So you may actually, because of all of these issues, that may get more people to the polls than it would normally. I still think, obviously, more votes are going to be cast in the presidential here than in the gubernatorial, but there's not going to be much voter drop-off.
So if the governor's race is a dead heat and it's being driven by the partisans, if you like Pat McCrory, you're going to vote for Pat McCrory, et cetera, then does it all come down to turnout?
Well, it always comes
down
to turnout, yeah. I mean,
okay. Early voting has been higher than normal in North Carolina. Which party is that more likely to help here?
Early voting almost always helps the Democrats out more. They always – if you're talking about mail-in ballots, that's traditionally more conservative, but that is –
I'm talking about people lining up at the public library.
But, yeah, that's definitely more – leans more Democratic.
But just that also goes back to what I was talking about before, though, is there's such a high percentage of unaffiliated voters that have done early voting this year, as a matter of convenience, I'm guessing, that we don't know as much about who is voting as we would in a classic year.
Yeah, traditionally, Democrats have banked early votes. In 2008 and 2012, they won the early voting. In 2008, it was enough to overcome the Republicans winning Election Day, 2012 not. And in both cases, we were tighter than almost any state in the country.
If Hillary wins, it would be helpful, if not essential, for her to have Democrats take back control of the Senate. Because if that doesn't happen, four more years of obstruction, we almost guaranteed of that. So will that help come from North Carolina? Will Richard Burr be defeated
by
Deborah Ross?
I don't think Burr did himself any favors with this, the two-pronged gaffe of bullseye on Hillary and, I'm going to block all Supreme Court justices for the next 4 years of a Clinton.
I didn't know what he said, so I looked it up. Here's what Richard Burr said in Mooresville to a group. He said, nothing made me feel, he was trying to tell a joke, and he said, nothing made me feel any better than when I walked into a gun shop yesterday in Oxford, and there was a copy of Rifleman on the counter. But the magazine had a picture of Hillary Clinton on the front, he said. I was a little bit shocked that it didn't have a bullseye on it. That's what he said.
Yeah, and I actually think that the other thing I'm sure we'll talk about is a potentially bigger deal. But what disturbs me about this is it was a joke. You know, he's not truly meaning it. It was clearly a joke. I've listened to the audio, did a story on it. It was a joke. But what does that say? How many times have we heard about jokes about violence for political opponents, specifically Hillary Clinton alone?
From Republicans, not from Democrats.
And it should be a worrisome trend, no matter who your political allegiance, where they lie, because that can get dangerous real quick. Unintended consequences, but still consequences.
There have been the election is rigged, and I'm not going to. I'll leave you guessing about whether or not I'm going to accept the results. All of that undermines the fundamentals of this, how this country works.
And go into certain areas, which we know, to see how they're voting. Mm-hmm. And also, Burr said this in a private context, and he didn't expect it to get out. And that's the thing. He sells himself as a Republican conservative, but,
not a scary one.
Not a scary person. But you see behind closed doors, he's playing that partisan role. So I think that really hurts him because it hurts the person. You feel like there is a public Richard Burr and a private one, and that hurts.
Well, that's what Hillary said. There's a public person and a private person.
And but I don't know if I don't ask her for that.
Yeah.
And, so there be
and
fair
usually
game.
The private person isn't making jokes about bullseyes.
Yeah. The other thing that Senator Burr said at that event, he said that if he and Hillary are elected, he will do everything he can to make sure that 4 years from now we're still going to have an opening on the Supreme Court. Now, if Americans are tired of nothing getting done and they're tired of partisan bickering, is that a tactic that will be looked kindly upon after this election is over?
I think you're right. That's more damaging than the Hillary
on that
one. Yeah, we were basically in our editorial saying that, also – not only did he say that, he also bragged about the fact that he's kept an opening on the Eastern District Federal Court in North Carolina open for longer than any other federal court judgeship in the country.
Yeah.
And he bragged about that as if that was something, even though he has said that the candidate that he's been blocking, he himself has said is qualified,
but
it was more of a political, I'm sticking it to Obama thing, which is just,
this is why people
horrible.
Should care about this, too. This is not just partisanship. And he's not alone. You've already got John McCain saying the same thing. Heritage Action, which is a GOP, political action of the Heritage Foundation, is calling for this, to happen if Hillary wins as well. They're talking about hobbling a check and balance in the Constitution. If you purport to love the Constitution, respect it as, the highest law of the land, then you should make sure that your constitutional duties are fulfilled and you allow the Supreme Court to have its full bench.
And even conservative Justice Clarence Thomas, who never says anything, has said that the confirmation process is an example of how Washington is broken, and at some point we've got to recognize that we're destroying our institutions and we're undermining our institutions. That's Clarence Thomas. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Elon University, committed to preparing global citizens with more that matters, including study abroad programs in 54 countries and study USA semesters in major American cities. More information at Elon.com. Vermont.edu. And the Southern Christmas Show, featuring craft and gift selections from over 400 holiday merchants, November 10th through 20th at the Park Expo and Conference Center. Details at southernchristmasshow.com. Polls show the presidential race tightening in these final days. President Obama criticizes the FBI's handling of a new investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series for the first time since 1908. A panel of journalists joins Diane Rehm for analysis of those stories and more in the National Hour of the News Roundup. The International Hour follows at 11. That's in 20 minutes it all begins, and we will continue with ours moments from now. Stay with us.
This week on Morning Edition, an ocean apart are suffering the same way.
With the downturn in coal, with manufacturing leaving, with all of that stuff happening, I mean, it's just in shambles.
It's like this area seems to be forgotten. It's like a dumping ground.
Plus, in Pakistan, kidney thieves prey on the most vulnerable. Listen to Morning Edition every weekday morning.
That's Morning Edition. I'm Marshall Terry. Join me weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. That is a version of our theme song as written and performed by Ed Regner, who was one of our contest participants this past summer. We played it again because Ed is in our studio audience.
Yeah.
In fact, Ed is our studio. Great job, Ed. Thank you. And he's a physical therapist, not a pianist, and not a musician per se, but obviously he knows what he's doing.
A.K.A. physical torturist.
Right. He's no stranger to the keyboard. All right, let's go back and talk a little bit more about Senator Burr, because he did walk that comment back a little bit,
tiny, tiny bit. And I think it's because he saw, you know, I'm guessing internal poll numbers or a lot of blowback of people who are worried about this. And this has not been a great issue for Republicans. He basically said, well, I'll consider if Hillary Clinton wins, I'll consider nominees, but – and then he basically laid out a formula which would allow him, you know, to say no on a numerous different levels based on political ideology.
Richard Burr also called the North Carolina media, and I quote, disgusting.
Yeah, who hasn't?
He said that they want me to go in front of a TV camera or in front of a reporter. That doesn't work very well for me right now. That just comes up with a negative story. Now, this is a refrain that is being sung by many GOP politicians from Trump on down, including the governor. Is there something there? Is the media unfair and disgusting in their – because a lot of people believe this – in their dealing with candidates and office holders?
Well, what is there is a political tactic for candidates who are trying to rally their base, which the base of the Republican Party –
but the Democrats don't say that. So that says to people who are Republicans, then the Republicans must be right because the Democrats don't complain about it.
No, that's not true at all. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders have come out to talk about bias. But the thing is this. I think it's kind of like your congressman or congresswoman. They're all corrupt. They're all terrible. They all need to lose their jobs except for the guy who's been representing my district or the woman who's been representing
my district. It's like the schools. The schools suck except the one that my kid
Right. I also think this is partial. People are watching the national media, and we all know the national media may be a little bit more partisan if you're looking at the MSNBCs or the Fox, and they assume everybody is that way.
But isn't that media education? MSNBC and Fox are designed to be biased, period.
But people don't understand it that way. They are like, oh, well, they're horrible on this one side. I mean, you have
– but they're designed that way. Why, don't people know that?
But they just
that?
Assume everybody's that way.
Because, Mike, they don't design it and tell you they designed it that way. They design it to look
but
like a regular –
but everybody knows it. Why don't they know it?
But we don't make the distinction enough between news reporters and pundits and commentators. And that's really gotten blurred, particularly with cable TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a media critic, too. I think certain things need to be criticized. But to say that everyone is scum, they're dishonest, and it has become, as Eric says, a bit of a show at a Trump rally at some point to look at the press pen and say, now let's boo these scum. And sometimes he takes after them by name, which – and sometimes that it's the – lately, it's been having not just the kabuki theater quality of it, but, you know, journalists have had to be escorted out. And I'm one of those folks who feel you don't want to live in a country without a free press. Right. And we're getting close to that line.
The Observer followed WFAE's example this week and held a forum on HB2. The chair of the North Carolina GOP, Robin Hayes, accused the paper, one he called an alleged news agency, of violating campaign finance laws. How did he make that leap?
Well, he basically was accusing us of, since it was, an alleged news agency, which, you know, has, he was conflating the editorial page with the news, the hard news division.
And surely he knows the difference. Surely he
knows. Yeah, okay. Of course he does. But he, you know, just sort of, you know, threw it out there as if the liberal Charlotte Observer is doing an in-kind contribution, essentially, is what he was saying, to okay. Roy Cooper's campaign by bringing up this HB2 issue that is friendly to Roy Cooper and not so friendly to Republicans.
So what did you learn from that forum that we haven't known already?
Well, I think what we learned in that forum is that, you know, I don't think we learned anything that was new, but we learned that the wounds that have been sort of laid bare by this whole HB2 debate, they are still very open, still very raw. I mean, we had one instance where a transgender woman was speaking very heartfelt and passionate words about her experience. And a HB2 supporter in the audience jumped up and started screaming at her that she was an abomination.
This is the street preacher that was escorted out?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And so he had to be escorted out.
He was thanked in a letter to the editor today for showing us the face of hate.
Yeah, which he did.
Governor McCrory appeared at what was billed as a town hall style meeting in Wake Forest this week, but he spoke only about the economy, healthcare, mental health, infrastructure, and the recovery from Hurricane Matthew, but not HB2. Those questions came from the president of the Wake Forest Area Chamber of Commerce. Was the decision to leave HB2 out of the mix of their questions theirs or the governor's?
That is a huge amount of speculation. Officially, Ann Welton, who is the chamber president for Wake County, says it was her decision. And basically what happens, they invited all these people to come in and submit questions. She saw the questions, saw that they were mostly about coal ash and HB2, said, I don't see those as being the issues that are important to this community. And so she went off and just decided to ask her own questions. And what's fascinating is, there's a lot of speculation over who did or do not. I will take her to word. I have no reason not to. But the fascinating thing to me is this also happened in a weird way here in Charlotte. Except those questions were submitted by the McCrory campaign.
At the Market Breakfast.
Yes, although the Charlotte Observer, they kept saying that you guys were asking.
It was from us.
Not me.
But in liberal media asking all those softballs. Come on.
But in a report filed by our own Mark Rumsey here at WFAE, he revealed that several Republican legislators running for re-election either didn't respond to requests for interviews in these waning days of the campaign or told us that they didn't want to discuss HB2. What does that tell us?
It tells us the political reality of House Bill 2 right now on the Republican side of the ticket. What do they have to gain by talking about House Bill 2, honestly?
If we don't have House Bill 2, we don't really have a governor's race right now. I mean, I truthfully believe the economic impact of that. I think McCrory runs away with this thing without House Bill 2.
So this week, the NAACP was granted a federal hearing over the cancellation of nearly 7,000 voter registrations in 8 counties over the past 2 years. That means 7,000 voters were removed from the voter rolls. Why?
Mailings. And anybody who wants the full story on this, I honestly, this is not a plug. Go to our website, WFAE.org. Listen to Michael Tomczyk's full story on it because it's fascinating, fascinating stuff. The 7,000 voters were basically removed by one or two people. And this shows you the power now with technology that you have to be able to do something that back in the day when these laws were created just was not possible. And it's combing through databases, sending out mailers.
Can be done by people at their computers, in their homes, and with a postage stamp.
Get a laptop and some postage, and you're ready to go. And it is frightening.
So the court asked some very pointed questions of the people involved in all of this. What stood out? Anything in particular?
Well, to me, I think the phrase that stood out is the system really set up like it's 1901? And the answer is yes. I mean,
what does that mean?
It is this archaic. If you send a mailer, the tactics that were used, and they're completely legal, they send a mailer, and an individual citizen sends a piece of mail, a bulk mail flyer or whatever, to somebody on the voter roll. If they get undeliverable, they then challenge that voter registration with the State Board of Elections. And then the State Board of Elections in order to try to verify if that voter should be on the rolls or not, sends a mailer often to the same address mm-hmm. where they got undeliverable in the first place. So it's not really clear if people know exactly what's going on. The thing that frightens me most about this tactic, and this came from the State Board of Elections, is if you are challenged and you don't know it, mm-hmm. you have absolutely no recourse. If you are stricken from the rolls in North Carolina, unless you go do early voting where you can do same-day registration, on election day, if you show up, you can cast a provisional ballot. It will not count if you are one of those people who are affected by this purge.
Wow.
There is no recourse. And that is by state law.
And yeah, and they found that the few people behind this are from the so-called – and I say so-called voter integrity groups that say that there is widespread voter fraud, and that's what they're trying to protect against. And, of course, we know that there really is usually very almost non-existent instances of in-person voter fraud. And it has been said to be targeting minorities in particular. And that's what the accusation is, because many of these people are in these counties with large African-American and minority voter bases. And it's harder to reach them in many ways. And that's the accusation. And so the judge pretty much was saying, well, this may be the law, but come on. Come on, this looks like targeted against it. And the Justice Department has taken notice, and they are going to be sending some watchers for the polls.
So this will not be settled, I take it, by Tuesday.
Yeah, actually, a ruling could come at any moment.
Okay. More emails. More revelations. This time, the emails concerned CMPD and the city of Charlotte and how they responded after the shooting in September of Keith Lamont Scott. Time Warner Cable News, once again, obtained these emails through the Freedom of Information Act and has been working on this story. So what do they show, Sean Flynn?
Well, it was interesting. They released Chief Putney's emails along with interim city manager Ron Kimball's emails. And we got whenever we do these FOIA requests, we don't exactly know what we're going to get. We don't really know what we're looking for, but it gives us a little bit of insight into the massive amount of information that these city leaders received. In the 10 days that we requested following that shooting, the chief received several thousand emails. There was 3,500 form emails that obviously came from one site where people just had to click on it and it sent an email to Chief Putney titled Stop Killing Black Men. And it had a list of demands and things like that. On the other side, there was a lot of emails from police groups all over the country saying, hey, Chief, we support you. You're doing a good job. Keep up the good work. Some of the telling emails I got is couple days after the uprisings in Uptown, the chief just sent an email to all of the 1,900 sworn officers saying a note of gratitude. He thanked them, and he received dozens of emails back from his employees, basically saying, "We're behind you 100%. Keep up the good work." The one email that stood out was from a city council member, John Autry, who didn't want to talk about it. He said he received found and got a hold of this text message from the White Knights, and it was almost a call to arms to deal with the people protesting in Uptown.
He was telling their members, the KKK members, to go down to Charlotte downtown and help whites against black animals. No robes or uniforms, just street clothes. If it gets nasty, you know what to do. That's a quote.
It's very disheartening to eat. I mean, read that, see that. I mean, that really stood out on the FOIA request, that information. And a lot of people, the police didn't want to talk about it. Councilman John Autry didn't want to talk about it. Councilman Al Austin did talk about it talk about his concerns and why he forwarded it. But
was the KKK a troublemaking factor?
As far as we know, that there was no indication of any KKK members being down there. But again, they were authorized in that text message to wear street clothes, so we didn't know who right. was there, but we didn't see anything.
So the county commission spent a couple of hours this week talking about the school board's impending decision on magnet school changes. Why? Because that's a school board decision, it seems.
Well, they would have to approve the money for the new buildings, if indeed any are needed for magnets. And some of the county commissioners kept saying that they had concerns about the direction that the school board is headed in with this diversity-driven, I guess you'd call it, magnet program that they are cooking up.
And you guys wrote an editorial, the paper, saying county commissioners must not derail CMS.
Well, yeah, there's been 18 months worth of very intensive study, dialogue back and forth between school board members, members of the community, parents, experts, just trying to figure out a way in which they can create a magnet plan that will help break up some of the concentrated poverty in our campuses. And the commissioners are sort of coming in at the tail end of it,
but
going,
they took
hold
no
on, hold on.
But they took no action, right?
Yeah, they made a lot of long, long speeches, but they wound up taking no action.
So is this just politics getting on the record ahead of the game?
Well, they even came right out and said, we just wanted this to be on TV so people know we were talking about
on
it.
On TV? Was it on Time Warner Cable?
Well, yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, now you're killing me, Mike.
Wells Fargo's troubles continue after the resignation of their CEO, John Stumpf, the firing of employees, hundreds of millions of dollars in fines and more. Now, the Securities and Exchange Commission has been called on by Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren, Jeff Merkley, and Bob Menendez to open an investigation. What information are they seeking that the Senate and House Banking Committees has not already uncovered?
I don't think anybody knows, at least sitting around this table, the exact answer to that. They're looking for fraud. And I think what's also really interesting, and this is more pertinent since we have so many Wells Fargo employees and possibly former employees here, is the anti-whistleblower moves that have been alleged against Wells Fargo, where people who had seen the tactics that Wells Fargo has now admitted not only was wrong, they're paying fines and everything else. That there's basically this little form that they file with a regulatory agency that gives, you know, bankers a report card, and you can get a black mark on that. You know, basically they write something bad about you and you can't find another job in the banking industry. Wells did that. There are allegations that Wells has done that to employees, and now the senators are also calling on Wells to be investigated for that practice. And those people called either that were, you know, allegedly singled out, they called the Wells Fargo ethics line to try to file a complaint and alert people to what was going on.
So one more thing before we go. LendingTree doubling its presence in Charlotte by adding 314 more jobs over the next 5 years with an average salary of $82,000. They arrived here in 1998, but they're still getting $4.9 million in incentives. Why? For adding these jobs?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
They're here.
It's part of the process. This is common practice.
It happens,
But I think in the next coming weeks, I know we're running out of time, we're going to see a lot more job announcements post-election.
Okay. That's Sean Flynn who gets the last word, managing editor of Time Warner Cable
News. Oh, not again.
Yeah. Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, Mary C. Curtis, columnist for Roll Call, and Tom Bullock, reporter for WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.